Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hey guys, this is Nerdist Podcast, episode number 246. It's a very exciting episode coming up, so I'm not going to take up too much time at the top, but I will say that I'm going to be kind of co-hosting and helping out Star Wars Celebration this weekend, August 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Then the following weekend, just going to Dragon Con just for fun. And I should probably bring some sort of cosplay, because that's what you do at Dragon Con in Atlanta the weekend after. And then Matt and Joan and I are going to be performing at the end of September at JFL 42, the Just for Laughs Toronto Festival. Go to jfl42.com to find out our shows and get tickets. And then we're going to be performing at New York Comic Con on October 12th. That's a Friday. So tickets for that, nerdist.com/calendar. I want to thank amazon.com for being our sponsor of the Nerdist Podcast. Very simple. If you go to nerdist.com, go to the page of this episode, episode number 246. Then at the bottom, there's a snazzy little Amazon banner. If you click on that, it just takes you to Amazon and you shop as you normally would, and you will be supporting your, hopefully, favorite podcast. You know what? Maybe I won't phrase it that way. You'll be supporting this podcast. So do that for us if you can. Like us on Facebook. Hug us on Twitter. Do other stuff to us on Google+. And now this episode. This is Joan Rivers. This is a very big one for me. I've been wanting this one since we started the podcast. Joan is... I mean, any comedian who is worth their weight in jokes loves, as far as I'm concerned, loves Joan Rivers. I saw her when I was a kid, and she's just a fucking... She is a tireless performer. 79 years old, still performs every week, and flies back and forth to LA to do Fashion Police, and it's just... She's a comics comic. She is a comics comic. So I'm going to shut up. And this is... We actually captured the moment that we met. It actually happened on the podcast. And here it is. The episode number 246 with Joan Rivers. I'm happy.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, Joan!
Hi.
Nice to see you.
You're not Ryan Seacrest.
I am not. No.
Nice to see Chris.
Chris, yes. This is Joan. I'm going to come around.
I'm Jonah.
Nice to meet you, Jonah.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you so much. We'll put you over there.
Beautiful watch.
Oh, thank you. It's I'm experimenting with... I don't normally wear watches. I'm experimenting with it, and it feels...
Cartier or Gucci?
I don't know. It's something Euro.
I think it's expensive.
It's heavy. I don't like things. I don't like things on my arm, so it feels weird.
What about a woman?
What about your hands?
I wouldn't wrap a lady around my fist this way.
All right.
That
all
sounded
right.
Weird.
Yeah. What about
actually,
your hands?
It sounded exactly the way I meant it. Fuck it.
We've seen that movie. Okay. So you're just here to observe?
No, I participate when I feel like it, okay. But I don't have to keep the conversation moving. It's quite fun.
Okay. And this is just audio, not video.
Just audio, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just all an right. Audio podcast. That's all we do. Because we find a lot of people ask us to do video, and they go, we want to see people. And I go, yeah, but it just puts an extra pressure on people when you're on camera. And so it's just audio's nice and relaxed. We want it to be a nice conversation.
I could look like this and no one will ever know.
You're very handsome for you.
To be fair, you look like that when you're on camera too, Jonah.
What?
You look exactly the same when you're on camera.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it's magic.
No, you don't shave and you still, your shirt's
thinner,
all ruffled.
I'm much more thin.
You're...
Much more thin, and yes. Also probably much more educated.
Yes, much.
Yeah. I mean, much for a lot of things.
Jonah doesn't know how to use
it. I just don't like saying that, so I get my way around it.
He's bad with qualifiers.
So tell me what you want. Are we on?
We're on. Yeah, we started. Oh. We started. I've been wanting to get you on this podcast since we started it 2.5 years ago.
I doubt that.
It's absolutely true, and I'll give you some backstory. My parents went to Vegas a lot because of my dad's work. And when I was a little kid, I saw you open for Carson when I was a kid. And then we met you after the show, and my mother was in love with you because you were so sweet to us, and you were so nice to me.
I was desperate. Fans. What did your father do that you had to go to Vegas?
My dad was a professional bowler.
Really?
Yeah, so there's a lot of bowling proprietors conventions.
You're not Jewish.
I'm not Jewish.
How
many Jewish bowlers are there?
Never.
I don't know if there are any Jewish bowlers.
A professional bowler?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so we saw tons of shows in Vegas with Steve Martin and, you know, Tony
Orlando.
How did
he make his money?
He was one of the top professional bowlers. And it's still not, not really comparatively a ton of money, but
you support a family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He did all right.
That's great. What did your father do?
Nothing.
Your clothes reflect that.
Yes. Yeah. I come from a long line of lazy people.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to continue the tradition.
your dad does things.
Yeah, he does things. He ran a business in Hawaii where they would put pipes into housing units. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Quite no bowler. He's no bowler.
Did he say
he does smoke a lot of bowls. That's for sure.
Did he say marry your mother?
Yes.
Yeah, because to go on a date and tell somebody that's what you do, you're dead in the water.
You're like, I lay pipe. Is that a euphemism? No, I literally lay pipe. That's my fucking job. But I think because I had this experience with you when I was a kid, I've always had this huge soft spot in my heart for you.
That's right. Well, you'll be sorry today. delighted to talk to you.
So I just want to, I want to talk
about. Well, not delighted, but.
But you're here. But I want
to. That's the battle, Chris.
It is. The other half is red lasers. I want to talk about just like comedy and where it came from and where it's going. And I want to understand a little bit the landscape when you started comedy, because particularly now, I feel like, well, right now there's a lot of censorship.
But I feel like there was more. Not on the internet.
No, not on the internet. You're completely uncensored on the internet.
That's what you're doing.
That's what we're doing.
You can say anything you want, Joe.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah.
It's so great. I'm living to see this.
You've been fighting that for decades, though.
Yes. It's so exciting. Just see this. I'm not making a joke. I think it's fabulous, especially for comedy.
Yeah. When you, what year, by the way, I saw a piece of work which gave me a ton of
documentary.
Your documentary. Which was a ton of insight into how your brain works. But I do want to understand a little bit better what comedy was like when you started, particularly for women in comedy.
Who cares? but by the way, just so you know, A Piece of Work, which is, I think, the number one documentary ever done by IFC, haven't seen a nickel.
Really?
So let's just start out with that.
Nothing.
How expensive was that documentary to make?
I don't know, but obviously millions and millions
of
dollars.
Yes, I guess so.
Never saw a penny. Not one check came in.
$300 million documentary.
Allegedly. And they're proud of it. It's our number one selling documentary. It's our number one documentary. And I'm wearing last year's shoes.
Well, I don't know.
So
oh, my God. How do you get out of the house in the morning?
Women in comedy, who cares?
Really? You think so?
Oh, I don't give a shit.
Okay.
No, let me just say, funny is funny is funny.
No, I agree. I just mean at the time when I feel like.
I didn't think about it.
No.
Do you know, Rose? I didn't think about it. It was later. It was much later when my group was Bill Cosby, Woody Allen, George Carlin, a little bit David Brenner. That was the kind of the group that I was with that were all sitting with, holding the number, you know. Wow. And Bob Dylan walking past with a Simon and Garfunkel that nobody wanted to listen to the tape,
right.
Which was The Sounds of Silence. We got a tape. Yeah, right. Let's go. So, the entire Sounds of Silence on one tape. Somebody found it in their drawer years later. Said, it's a whole goddamn tape. Anyhow, And it was years later when I realized I was the last to break through of the group that I was with in the village.
Yeah.
And I thought, I bet it was because I was a woman. But it never occurred to me then. Isn't that stupid?
They didn't treat you like, they just treated you just like another comic, just like one of
them. Woody was there too at the time. And Barbara Streisand, not pretty, trying to sing. barking and singing. never thought about being, I was not treated like a woman. But I'm still not like, which is one of the reasons I'm funny. But it must have been that they didn't expect that from a woman. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I was talking about things a woman didn't talk about.
Well, what was the difference between your club act and your, because TV obviously was so super, super, super squeaky clean.
Yes.
So what was the difference between that and your TV?
Well, I was wild for then. I found my old record and I played it for Melissa when I broke on Carson. And they did a record immediately called Mr. Phyllis and Other Stories, which was an outrageous title because I was talking about my gay hairdresser, which he didn't mention.
Right.
And he was called Mr. Phyllis. Ha, ha, ha. And, you know, and I said to Melissa, listen to what people said. This is so outrageous. And it was so sweet. You know what I mean? You're listening to it. You go, this is so dear. But it was outrageous for its time. I was pregnant on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, right.
And I've talked about this before. And I wasn't allowed to say I was pregnant. I was 8 months gone. And I had to say, Mr. Sullivan, soon I'll be hearing the pitter-patter of little feet. I was like a tent with a bow. And you couldn't mention it. So it was very different in those days. But I was outrageous for those days.
Oh, wow.
I remember roast, Carl Reiner did a whole bit about, like, he's like, in my day, you couldn't even say someone's pregnant. You had to say they are with child or, you know, something like that. And then he just started saying cunt over and over again.
I love that. They do this comedy roast of me, and they say, and we're going to bring on Carl Reiner, and I'm so worried, will he be all right? Will this poor guy be able to keep up with all the young comics? And he comes on, it's a gentleman, you know, he's dressed correctly. There's nothing... tie, shirt, the whole thing. Then he gets out there. He was, and you want to go, good for you.
Yeah.
Right smack, right down the line on the head. He nailed
it. Really nailed it.
Just, yeah, he
and,
nailed
like,
it.
And seemed very excited about what he was able
and
to
then
get
died.
Away with saying. Yeah.
Just,
that was it.
Died and fell into Phyllis Steele's arms, so it was a twofer.
I want to, was
but
the...
Anyway, I'll answer your question seriously, because... You want a real answer?
I don't care, actually.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I'm trying to get sort of what a picture of what...
Women weren't comedians. Very few women were stand-ups in those days. Because if you were pretty, you were a singer.
Right.
And so it was really the ugly girls that were the comics. And you always got a chance in a review to be ugly, ugly, ugly. And then you could sit in a stool and sing My Funny Valentine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Was that like, you know, look at that. She's ugly, but she has My Funny Valentine. So, but I wanted to look good because I was single.
Yeah.
So I would like dress up as best I can, hoping somebody in the audience would go, you know, she's not that much of a dog. And so I was the first like decent looking girl, not pretty like Sarah Silverman is. Or a Whitney, who's, these are really great looking girls now. But I was the first human looking thing that told jokes.
And how did audiences react to that? Did they not understand right away?
Are you kidding? I would get booked. And it was so bad, I would come out and say, my lecture tonight is about. And I would do like a lecture. I would let them think I was doing a lecture. It was terrible. The first ones that kind of got me, the first luck, Lenny Bruce saw me in Greenwich Village and sent me a note and said, you're right, they're wrong.
Oh,
look
great.
At this, my eyes still, look at this.
Yeah.
Still cry from that one. And that got me nowhere for 5 years after. But you know what that means?
Yeah.
Lenny Bruce?
Yeah.
And then I got into Second City, and then that changed my life. Because Second City was, and that was Alan Arkin, and Mike Nichols was directing. And it was a whole great group down there. David Steinberg, you know, we were all running around there.
That was like the first.
And that was the first part where they said, she's funny.
And you must have found like, oh, I found my people. I finally found my people.
That was amazing. and they accepted you.
It's a huge deal for any for any comic to finally, you know, because you start off and you kind of feel isolated. The internet has sort of changed everything. But before, you would sort of feel isolated in your own community. And you're like, I don't, maybe I'm weird. And then you would fucking stumble across a group of like-minded comics and go, oh my God, I'm not fucking crazy.
But yeah. I would find that maybe every 10th show, they would laugh. You know, just enough that you go, okay.
Yeah.
Also, I was working in Greenwich Village. I was doing Second City, and I already knew I wanted to be on my own, so I would run down the street and then do a single at a place called The Duplex, which had Woody Allen, literally. Woody Allen, Barbara Streisand, Joan Rivers, and a guy named Barry Denon, only one that didn't, all on the same bill.
Jesus.
And all written in pencil, because they couldn't. They didn't know how long you were going
right.
to stay. So, and I would do, and a lot of gay boys came in, and gay men were the first ones that laughed.
Really?
God bless the gay men. Both of you are straight?
Yeah.
And
wish I was cool enough to be gay.
Me here. Yeah. Gay men, God bless gay audiences. And they're most loyal to a woman. Yeah, they're still coming around. God bless them.
So what were the venues? I mean, was it were there like traditional clubs at that point, or did that spring up in the 70s?
What was going on in Greenwich Village were the coffee houses.
Yeah.
Where you see, so you went into the coffee houses where Mel Brooks would come in with Anne Bancroft. Which was
Jesus
great
Christ.
Time. Wow. I'm telling you.
So not that much crazy. Has changed, except she's talking about Mel Brooks and Woody Allen.
It was and Stiller and Mira were doing their act there. You know, Mel Brooks, sorry, Mel Brooks. So you're very excited, you know.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks. And Anne Bancroft, who was slapping kids around because she was in whatever the thing with Helen Keller. And so you did coffee houses, and then you did freebies.
Yeah.
That's why when they start saying, I won't. Yeah, well, you're a comedian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I won't perform unless I get paid. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Right.
They're giving you a chance to stand up and do it. Shut up.
Well, I run a comedy theater, and Jonah produces a weekly show there, and we all perform for free because we like performing. Yeah.
I, to this day, work once a week when I'm in New York. I work at the West Bank Cafe for no money.
Yeah.
And I do it because it gets new material comes out.
Exactly.
Well, you can't. I mean, making money as a comedian today is kind of a dicey... kind of a dicey prospect.
It's a dicey prospect. Making money as an actor.
Sure.
I love that when it's a woman. What are you? I'm an actor. Excuse me? Yeah. Hello, I'm an actor. Oh, shut the fuck up. You're an actress. But anyway, but go ahead. So it was, but women, yes, it was harder for women then, but just because women just weren't doing it.
And then, so you have this, so there's this cluster of, I mean, like, now, obviously, the
now,
most
every
legendary.
Third person is a comic.
Well,
a woman.
I feel like there's a lot of comedy now because, you know, there's a lot of venues, it's particularly in Los Angeles and New York. There's a lot of places to go up. People put stuff on the internet. So it's just people's roles aren't as black and white as, like, I'm a banker. I'm going to do this. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to pursue. We have the luxury of being a little more selfish now.
Yes. But it's much easier. And it's, my mother, to the day she died, never said I was a comedian.
Really?
She would always say she's a writer.
That?
She's a writer. So
which is technically true.
It was. I was writing my own
You're
stuff.
Writing.
She's a writer.
If I don't want to get into a longer conversation with a stranger and they ask what I do, I just say, oh, I just write.
Yeah.
I don't want
to
say I'm a comedian because then they go, oh.
Yeah. Do you know? So what do you think of? They pull out someone you despise.
Yeah, exactly. What's
his name?
That guy.
That idiot. Oh, God, there's one guy that's so not funny. Oh, you know, he's blah, blah, blah. Hugh Dane.
Dane Cook?
Now, I'm home late at night. And they're doing a close-up of this kid, this guy that's bombing. It's just stupid stuff. He's not funny. You go, oh, you poor slob. And then the camera starts to pull back. And he's in
Madison Square Garden.
And they're screaming. And I'm lying in bed with a dog that's gone hungry because I ate his food tonight. And I'm feeling sorry for this guy. So I don't get a lot of the new, as I said, the new comics.
Well, I don't, I mean, I would
and
say.
I take nothing away from him. He's making a bloody fortune.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, I mean, I don't really, it's, He's not for me. I try not to begrudge anyone.
Oh, you don't know? Go there. Don't
it's
be
true.
The Rhoda. Yeah, don't be Mr. Nice.
I am. I'm that guy. I hate, you know why? Because.
Because your act sucks. Why? I haven't seen you, so I don't know.
No, but no, it's not that. It's you know what it is? It's just that I've been on television for 18 years, and I you know, just as connected to the internet as I am, I always feel bad when people say shitty things and they don't know me. And so I think I'm just like, I try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. But that's just me.
But as a comment on, like, you know, his artistic output, you I think you're allowed to kind of say if it's your
cup of tea.
Yeah. It is not my cup of tea. It's not my cup of tea. And if, you know.
You hate tea. I see you get tea and you throw it on the ground.
I just fucking
hate
shit on it.
That's not my cup. Yeah. Bring me another day
that's
Clark.
Not my cup.
No. I don't throw it. I don't want the tea to feel bad. So I just don't want to throw it. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. I try to hug the tea.
So
I
who's wonderful? Little Britain.
Little Britain's fucking
Little
great.
Little Britain, yeah, on the pedestal. Yeah. I met them in London. I was like going like this to them. Oh, you're so brilliant.
Yeah, Little Britain's great. I mean, we love a lot of the really great, you know, like the Noel Fieldings of the world, just like
Louis C.K.
Louis, yeah. Louis C.K. excellent turn on Louis' show, by the way, where you guys fuck each other at the end of the episode.
So funny. I had never seen a show when I did it.
Yeah.
And now I'm devoted to that show.
Do you see? Right. I feel like there's a Woody Allen parallel.
With him?
With Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. I just hope he keeps humble.
Yeah. I think he will.
I hope, I pray, because he's so good as every man.
Yeah.
He's so good as the schlub. You know?
I think he will. I mean, he seems, I think the one
the
good.
The real man. Real. He's the real capital R, capital M. You know, he's. Every man.
Yeah. I think one of the luxuries that, I mean, it's, some people think this sucks, but as a comic, sometimes it takes 20 years to hit it. And so I think 20 years of almost making it, never making it, struggling, like when you finally make it, it's like, you know what? I don't have to be a cock. I can just all take it in stride.
And it just, but you need it for comedy. I can't explain. Any comic that makes it fast, no. I always tell the ones that are starting, it's going to take you at least 7 years.
To find your voice.
Don't worry. At least 7 years. Can you take it for 7 years? And for a woman, it is so tough.
Yeah.
To go on the road and you're by yourself, terrible clubs. I mean, I went through it all. And I came out of a very upper middle class family and Phi Beta Kappa. And my sister was a lawyer, youngest Columbia Law School graduate, woman ever at that time. And I said, my parents said, what do you want to be, doctor? No, I want to be an actress, which is even worse.
Oh, right.
Because my father's a doctor. Every hooker that came in said she was an actress. So he thought I wanted to be a hooker, and he knew, looking at me, I wouldn't make a dime. So he was like so upset. So upset.
What do you think it is about comics? What do you think it is about, because I feel, you know, sometimes I
women
say-
Women comics or comics?
Just comics in general, like, because people ask me- like, oh, I'm starting comedy. Should I do it? And I go, listen, try it. And if you don't have the gene for it, you won't keep doing it. But if you have the gene, nothing will stop
nothing
you.
You don't even say try it. If you want to do it, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's simple. And if you have to question yourself, get out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go be a shoe salesman. Go be something.
Why do you think so many guys, like, once they make it big, just stop doing comedy? Were they just? Do you think they're using it as a vehicle, or do you think they
now
just
they
get
are.
Afraid?
Don't you think?
I don't know. I see, you know, like, I see guys that I think were really great, and then they kind of stop doing comedy, and then I go, oh, was it? Maybe they get afraid when they get famous because they just don't get the.
But they get into the sitcom.
Yeah.
And then they're scared to go back in and see if they're going to think. Yeah. And a lot of people, I'm not going to mention names, but a lot of people made it on sitcoms that weren't making it in clubs.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? And so they don't want to go back. We're going to say, he's not so funny.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of easy when you're a comic and you're just a comic. You're kind of an underdog in a general sense. Like, you're the person that you got to get there and you got to make them laugh. And then when you go hit it big with a sitcom to then, like, come back, you're not an underdog anymore. You're, like, this big name. And then it's, I think for some comics, it could get hard. They're like, ah, now I'm at this name. I'm not sure how to, like, play it, you know, like, low self-esteem kind of stuff.
And a lot of people laughed at you. Carol Burnett, who I really loved, would say things when she was at her height. And everyone, she'd say, gee, this coffee looks like it's a coffee color. Carol, stop. Did you hear what Carol said? And see, 20 years of that, you know, now the show is over And Carol says, gee, this coffee kind of looks like a coffee color. Yeah. And
oh, was that now? One more time. Yeah, this coffee?
Well, it's like, it's comedy credit. It's like, it's like, I know you're funny a lot, so anything you say must be gold.
And these poor people get very caught up, and then they go into the real life of, well, you better be funny. Bill Cosby once said, before you're famous, they give you 2 minutes before they hate you.
Oh, yeah.
He said, after you're famous, they give you five.
Yes. Oh, they totally. I've seen that happen in clubs where really famous comics get on stage and people go ape shit for like the first 5 minutes. And then it's like, kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
And then if they're working out material, then it's like, and then it sucks because they judge that cow. I thought this guy was funny. He's like, he's fucking working out material. Yeah. Give the guy a break.
But that's why you have to go in the little clubs.
Yeah.
That's why I stay in this club, as I said, the West Bank in New York, it holds 100 people. And sometimes I'm laughing hysterically and they're staring at me. But then I said, do you understand how stupid this is? I'm enjoying myself and you pay. This is all wrong. But you have to just keep on doing it and you have to love it. You have to love when you say something funny or you think something funny and then you say it and then they laugh.
Do you
get a check at the end?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Do you beat yourself up still if you don't have a great set, or do you?
I can't wait to get back and I lose all self-esteem immediately. I lose it on stage. I begin to stutter.
It's amazing.
I hear myself stuttering. I think, you asshole, you're in the business 48 years. Stop stuttering. You're okay. But sometimes when you bomb and it's so bad, I had just come off a tour in England, amazing tour. They just love, you know, like, love me. And I'm hired by the South African rich, rich couple to go to the Bahamas to do one night for them at a private party.
Oh, boy.
And then I was just take pictures with the family afterwards, you know, it's all on the contract. I get out there. Dislike is not the word.
Oh.
Disgust, disdain. And I started to laugh because I had just come from 14 shows. Yeah, yeah. And I just laughed my way through. And I would say, here's another one you're not going to like. And then I go back to take the picture. And they said to me, the Schwartzes do not want to take pictures with you.
Oh, gee. Oh, fuck the Schwartzes.
Yes, fuck the Schwartzes.
That should be your next
tell
album.
Them I'm black.
I think Fuck the Schwartzes is your next album.
Fuck the Schwartzes.
That's so funny that we, you know, it's that we have these sort of weird, very short-term memories about what our abilities are. And then at any moment we could go, I know I had a great set in the earlier show or last night. But I guess I just lost it now.
Yeah. You're only ever as good as your last set.
You're only as good as your last joke.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Even
when you give it all, how about your last joke has to be your best?
Yeah.
It never is. You know what I'm saying?
So I guess I'm just going to, well, thanks, you guys. Yeah. So.
Woody Allen one time told me he was bombing so badly that he said to himself, the first joke, I don't care where it is, that I get a laugh, I'm walking off, you know what I mean? And he did something, and he said it was like a long story that was going to something, and then my mother said, Woody, and they laughed. He said, I just turned around and walked. Thank you. <God." it? laughs> Just walked off. But it's nice to know that they all have that. Every except the confidence of some people, which amazes me, that hear the laughter when there is no laughter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's but on
Dane
the
Dane Clark, whatever his name is.
Dane Clark.
What's his name? Cook. Cook, whatever.
Well, I think a lot of, I know that special you were talking about, and if we're just being honest, I watched it too, and I was like, I don't know where the joke is. It was just like, you know, when you're going to the movie theater and then people talk during the previews, and I was like, but then what happens?
And they're all going,
and people are like, ah. And I think a lot of times people laugh at things that they recognize, and then sometimes comics go, oh, that must be funny. You're like, no, they just recognize that you said, like, oh, Funyuns. Oh, I eat Funyuns or whatever.
Yeah, they do the thing. You eat Funyuns all the time. He eats them all
the time.
This
motherfucker, you don't even know. Yeah. But, you know, I think someone said, oh, well, comedy is really about exposing a truth. And I'm like, well, I guess.
Just make them. You know, again, Woody Allen said to me once, somebody was like, what makes something funny? I always love when they ask you to analyze. Leave me alone. It's working.
The least funny thing in the world is analyzing what makes a joke funny.
And he said, just say, thank you, God, and go on to the next joke.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not analyzing. They're laughing at the cup of coffee. They're going to stay laughing. Good.
It is coffee colored.
That's it. Yeah. Coffee. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Carol. Jonah, you, this guy, this fucking guy. But I also the other thing that is very interesting to me about you is what
nothing is interesting about me to a straight man. But go ahead.
That's not true.
Yeah, right.
You, because I'm a workaholic, but you are, I think, more of a workaholic than I am, which is very hard to do. And sometimes I sit and I go, what am I running from? Because I feel like when I sit too long alone with my thoughts, I kind of start to go crazy. Is that it for you?
It's just, no, I had 7 years before anything happened for me. Really bad. You know, I look back now, I go, oh, good that I went through that. And wasn't that wonderful? I slept in my car. I ate ketchup soup. I mean, even though I didn't know there was a family in Larchmont somewhere that would have taken me back if I'd stopped. But I still went through all that horror. And I just think it's all going to go away. And I'm one of those people, I just never believe it is. I look at my apartment in New York, and I can tell you how I can break it up and rent it.
Wow.
Yeah, you know what I'm telling you? I can tell you, well, that could become a little studio apartment. I could rent that out, and they can use the kitchen privileges. I have it all worked out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what 7 years of really tough times does.
I mean, what's incredible is that no matter how... You know, no matter how long you do it or no matter how many experiences you go through, early on, we kind of get these things programmed into our heads, and it doesn't fucking matter. If you made $1 billion tomorrow, I'd be like, yeah, but I might lose it the next day. So
but
what am I going to do?
You will in our business. I've been up and down. After Carson and after I was fired from Fox, I couldn't get a job for 3 years. I mean, couldn't get a job. Couldn't get an audition. I finally made it by going back to Broadway in Broadway Bound. Mike Nichols didn't even want to read me. I had to say, please, I will play for the studio. I will pay for everything. Just have someone come in and hear me read. And, of course, I got the job. And that's, you know, but dead in the water. I never got back on television nighttime 21 years before I was put back on nighttime. 21 years. And then Letterman was the first.
Yeah.
And still Leno, that asshole. I have never been on Leno.
Nah, I don't think you're missing much.
I don't give a shit. You know, tell me a funny thing he said. But there's another one, lucky because you got a big chin. But tell me a brilliant Leno. Tell me the last time you said, did you hear what Leno said last night?
Well, the thing with me and my relation, because I was, you know, like, comedy for me when I was growing up, I knew every comedian, I knew every bit, I watched every special, I was obsessed with everything. And I remember in the 70s and the 80s, I really liked Jay as a comic. And then for some reason, when he took over that show, it just a lot of that just went away.
The ego. This is one that the ego is so huge. And also stupid. When he gave NBC, you know, I'm going to leave in 5 years. And I said to my assistant right then and there, remember that whole thing? And they gave it instead to poor
Conan.
Conan, yeah. Poor thing, who's now... buried somewhere in chapter, as I call it, chapter 11, in New York, with Channel 11. But I said, 5 years ago, very fast, he ain't going to want to go.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I could do other things. What? What? Go polish a car?
Well, I remember I saw him I was performing at the comedy festival in Vancouver like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And he performed there at one of the shows. And so I took some friends and I'm like, listen, I know whatever you think about the Tonight Show, like Jay really was a funny comic. He was super like edgy and sardonic and had a great.
His segments on Letterman's Late
Letterman were great.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
and so we went and he was, and we were all like, and I'm not trying to rip on the guy, but it was a bummer. Like he did like Monica Lewinsky jokes and we're like, it's 2005. Yeah. What are you doing?
Stop it.
Yeah.
You have to show a picture and explain.
Yeah, exactly.
You know when you do a joke and you realize they don't know who you're talking about?
Yeah.
I had lunch. A friend of mine called me up and said, the two of you are going to stare at me. How would you like to have lunch with Kim Novak?
Oh, I know Kim Novak.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. Bell, Book, and Candle.
Yes, yes, yes. I watch. My life is old movies. That I just love old movies.
Yeah.
And I have a hairdresser who's Puerto Rican who's seen nothing and he's gay. So my big thrill is to sit with him and show him Mrs. Miniver. That's right. How sad my life is these days. Come on over and we're going to watch two Betty Davis movies.
Two?
Oh, oh, Jones.
For free?
Yeah. See, I'll be there. So, and so my friend calls me up and says, do you want to meet Kim Novak? I went crazy. So excited. Bell Book and Candle. Vertigo, Kim Novak. And we went out to lunch and I couldn't eat. I was so excited. And she's still amazing looking. She must be at 82, 83. Still. Wow. I mean, and I said to the waiter, do you know who you're waiting on? Do you know who you're waiting on? Kim Novak. And he just stared at me like, you've gone out of your mind, old lady. You know what I mean? It's like, that's why it goes so fast. That I don't know what the question was, so forget. But the answer to everything is fame comes and goes.
Yeah.
So you have a right to feel insecure in this business.
I mean,
that's why you're very smart with what you're doing now.
What with the?
Because you're in the new world. You're in the internet.
Yeah.
You've got your own. What do you call that thing? Your own station.
Yeah, yeah. We have a YouTube channel, and then we do the podcast.
How do you get? Why? And do you make money?
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, we do. I mean, it's a company and, you know, we have employees and
who gave you the money to do it?
Well, at first, I partnered with someone who had I partnered with a guy who was much more business minded than I am. I just want to make stuff. I'm a comedian.
Yeah, right.
And I realized I know what my weaknesses are. My weaknesses are not to build a business infrastructure. And so I partnered with this guy and, you know, he had that. And we started, you know, as far as the podcast goes, it works pretty much like radio. We have X number of listeners. Hey, sponsor, do you want to sponsor this episode?
How'd you get a sponsor?
You know, there are companies that we paired with early on that find sponsors specifically for podcasts. And then after a while.
Are you paying?
He gets paid?
Yeah, I do.
All right. So already this is one.
Yeah.
We can tell a little bit. You haven't got a stitch of jewelry on. There's no watch. Yeah.
Where's your bling, Joe?
If a guy like me was wearing jewelry, wouldn't that be a little weirder?
That would be weird.
But you know, it's even said you would make it a phone call from a booth, and that's really poor.
You know what there aren't, though, Jonah? Hipster
How
pimps.
Many people don't have their own phone? It's so sad.
Every time I see someone on a public phone, I go, wow. Look at that. That's fun. That's fun.
Look at him appreciating old technology.
Probably drugs.
It's probably untraceable call.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
So you got this partner that's
and we sort of built it out.
Internet and they tune into you and watch you on their computer.
They listen to the podcast and we listen to the podcast and then we started a YouTube channel which was actually funded by YouTube. We pitched them a bunch of shows we want to do and they gave us money to make a bunch of programming and it really.
Are you enjoying it?
I love it. I mean, what's crazy for me is that in I guess maybe 5 years ago I was sort of on one of those downslopes that you were talking about. And I had no real reason to do this. And I was like, you know, I think I'm only going to work on stuff I understand and love from now on. And which means I'm not going to take crappy hosting jobs that I don't want to do. I'm only going to host stuff I want to host. I'm only going to perform where I want to perform. And it just weirdly changed my life.
But the whole future, I see my grandson. My grandson doesn't watch television. He has his computer.
It's all on the
and
internet.
He has his iPhone. And that's the future.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it, you're an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the big companies are stumbling over themselves trying to figure it out. But the internet's very specific because people consume television very passively. But the internet is all about intent. You have to know. It's sort of like you can perform in New York and you probably get foot traffic because it's New York and everything's tied together.
Right.
But if you go to do a comedy show in L.A., you have to go there on purpose because you have to drive and you have to park. And so the internet is exactly like that to me. It's like people have to see your stuff on purpose and then they have to share it for it to work.
Right.
That's how that ecosystem works.
So how did you let them know, here I am, I'm here and I'm now on YouTube. How did you get that message out?
I was still hosting. I started hosting shows again in 2008 after not working for a few years. And I just sort of realized, you know, whenever I can, I'll just sort of remind people on television that I am doing this other thing over here. And it sort of helped give me a little bit of an advantage out of the gate. Yep. It helped a lot. That helped. Yeah. So you have a huge audience already, so you could do that.
I want to get into the business. You have no idea. After seeing this, seeing your watch, seeing your jacket, you got to
see me.
Seeing you?
Yes, I'm a great accessory.
It's expensive to feed this guy.
Yeah, look at him.
Yeah, I know.
This guy's a 2,000 calorie
Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't been hearing my stomach rumbling over the microphone.
Yeah.
This guy is a is an eater.
Yeah. About like half of those calories is in booze. So.
That's good. Hey. I understand that.
Yeah.
How about we do Fashion Police and we start taping at 7 o'clock in the morning?
I don't know how you guys do those early morning shoots.
I have my Starbucks cup filled with white wine.
And I don't.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That sounds like fun.
For a Jew, impossible.
Well, it's not like I can understand why you could do a show at 7:30 in the morning, but I know you have to have an audience there.
Oh.
And whenever you, it's like, I just know most people don't watch and go, hey, I wonder what time of the day they tape that show. They just think nighttime, it's E, but you guys have to tape that show at like, what, like 10 o'clock
people
in the morning?
Come in with their boxes.
Yeah.
Do you understand this? So I think they come in to use the bathroom and they stay to watch the show. And it's just, but they're a wonderful audience because they're so grateful to be inside.
Yeah. You know? That's all that matters. You know, especially during the summer, it's hot outside. They just want an air-conditioned studio. Yeah, exactly. Oh, what's she doing? All right.
Miss Joan gives us a place to stay and a couple laughs while we're at it.
Thank you.
We're on the street 6 days a week, but every Fashion Police Thursday.
Yeah. Go inside. You get the bathroom. She gives you some candy because I give them from the craft wagon.
Yeah, you got to give them the candy. Wake them up.
Give them the candy. Wake them up. Get them crazy.
Indoor plumbing and butterscotch.
But now they want to move us to the evening. I want to stay in the morning.
You do?
Whatever Fashion Police, whatever reason it's working, it's working.
How the fuck do you fly from the East Coast every week?
Every week.
How do you?
I could tell you every menu on American Airlines.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
East Coast and West Coast bound.
East Coast back and forth. And they know, you know when it's too much when the stewardess says, no, Joan could put her luggage here.
You almost start, it almost starts to become a private jet at that point.
Well, not when you get a snorer next to you.
No.
But, or a farter. You know,
secret farters on the, are very bad.
Someone that's had broccoli and you see him coming, it's not good. But what I do is I do a lot of reading now so people think I'm smart. It's so great because I have 10 hours every week back and forth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you just feel like you need to be on the East Coast?
I live with Melissa. She's really thrilled.
Yeah.
And I need to be on the East Coast because there's nothing like it. You guys are both West Coasters.
Yes.
The energy in New York. You kidding?
Wears no, it's
out.
It's
wears me out.
Oh, it's fabulous! I hit New York, and I know I'll be in theater that night. You know,
yeah.
It's there's nothing like New York. Nothing like New York.
What do you? How do you not fall over?
Because I just cranky.
Is that it?
But people say it's age. They have no idea. It's not age. I was always cranky, but this is it's just you just do it. And also, I love. Here we go. I love the business, and I'm scared not to do it. I'm scared. You know what I tell every comic? Turn nothing down.
Right.
You don't know which door is going to open. I didn't want to do Fashion Police. I thought, ugh, this is beneath me, and I don't want to go and talk about fashion. My manager said there's nothing else at the moment.
I love that idea.
Okay.
I'm warm and fuzzy. Yeah. Joan?
Well, we can make it work.
Yeah. Joan, look at your book. You're getting blind here with the white. And I started, Melissa produces it, and she said, it's going to be just great, and they're going to let you be funny, and they're letting me be funny.
Well, I think that's the most important thing to a comic, is as long as, because sometimes you get hired for stuff, and they go, we want you to be you, and then you start doing the thing you do, and they're like, can you not do that? And you're like, what the fuck did you hire me for?
Change
well, that's always. We did one joke. Whitney Houston had just died. It was Grammy weekend. I said she looked the best at the Grammys in mahogany from head to toe, and we got such letters, and you can't say, but it was a great joke.
And did E cut it? Or?
E cut it.
Yeah.
And they were right. Looking back, I hate to say this because now, I see she said we were right. They were right that time.
Right. But most of the time.
It was a great joke.
Yeah. And you just did another, you just had to defend a joke when you, like you said something about the, like Costco's real bad, like the Costco's
I chained myself to Costco.
Oh, yeah. You chained yourself to Costco because they weren't carrying your.
They weren't carrying my book. Joan Rivers, I Hate Everybody Starting With Me. On the back of it, I have two quotes they didn't like. Costco, who sells condoms and 50 Shades of Grey. One quote was Marie Antoinette.
The 50 Shades of Grey is enough to fucking.
50 Shades of Grey, they sell it by the palace.
And guns. Yeah.
I don't know if they sell guns. Allegedly. Say allegedly or you'll be off
the allegedly sell guns.
Guns. So, I have two quotes. One, Marie Antoinette says, never mind cake after reading this book, they should eat shit.
Right.
Stupid. And the other is Will Chamberlain says, even if I were alive, I wouldn't fuck her.
So it's the blur. It was the fake joke blurbs that got them upset.
So I said, "This is such an opportunity." So I went into Costco. I got a hold of this Mexican lady who spoke no English, and I handcuffed myself to her cart. And I sold my book inside. And when they said, "You're on Costco property," I said, "No, it was stolen from the Indians." I made a whole big thing. Send me a Creole, so and I'll leave.
Her history checks out, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. We did kind of take this land.
About America. She's right.
She's right. Yeah. This girl is right. And then my assistant, who is an African American, and she said, "My ancestors picked cotton, so she has the right to stand here in cotton." I mean, it became, I was like the Jewish Rosa Parks. It was fabulous. And then I compared book banning to Nazi Germany, and ADL sent me a letter. Sent me a letter saying this is not the same as Nazi Germany.
And you're like, especially because of just because you're you. You must be constantly going, "Guys, they're jokes.
That's a joke.
They're jokes. I don't fucking really mean that it's the same as Nazi. It's a joke. Do you know what? I'm a comedian."
But they don't want to hear that.
No.
They don't want to hear that, you know.
Well, it's offensive. It's supposed to be because it's a joke. If, like a nice thing to say, it wouldn't be funny.
Well, it's the old story. And the whole thing now, I always say, it's my age. You know, I could say that because it's my age. But now, unfortunately, Betty White, that cunt, she's taken away the
age. She really has.
The age card from me. Oh.
It's not fair.
Came back from nowhere. I had it covered. I was the oldest standing comedian. I had it covered.
She's not performing every week, though.
Oh, she's performing enough.
She's not taking live show gigs from you.
Not live, but there's plenty of money there that I could be using for diapers.
It's true.
It's going into her coffers.
You don't want to do a prank show. Do you?
I'll do anything. We're back to that. Yeah. You kidding? I can do that.
I watched the. Did you see the PBS special, the Carson PBS special?
Yeah, that was very unfair.
What was unfair?
I was very angry at that. They said, I don't like to talk about Carson. Carson, and I always said, the best. Did you ever work with him? You were too young.
No, I didn't.
The best straight man in the world.
Yeah.
In the world. He could look at your eyes, Chris, and he knew where you were going and when to come in and say, "Well, how fat was she, Chris?"
Yeah.
But he knew when to come in. Nobody could touch him, but the meanest son of a bitch, allegedly a wife beater, used to bring hookers allegedly into the house. Not your nice guy, drunk, allegedly mean. So they call me, and when I went to my own show at Fox, and it's so boring, but I called him first. First person I called, and he hung up on me. I said, "Johnny, I want you to have my own show coming up." Hung up on me. I called him back, and the wife said, "He's not here."
Oh,
and I said, "He lives in a one-room house. He had one of those modern open houses."
Oh, right.
I said, "Take a good look around, because he's there."
Right.
And he wouldn't talk to me. And then they claimed that I never told him, and it got very ugly. So they come to interview. We're doing a special on Carson. We want to hear your side of it. So, I go in, I sit down, and I tell them my side of it. And then they go, and they interview two people. One was the last wife who got all the money. Yeah, she's going to say, "Yeah, I spoke to Joan." She's not going to say anything. She's counting the money,
Yeah.
And the other was a man named Peter LaSalle, who we had offered a job at Fox and had been a good friend of ours and just denied the whole thing, allegedly. And so they put them on and didn't put my thing on. I was very hurt. And I called them up. I said, "Put my side on, too."
I did.
It made me out to be the villainous, and I'm tired of it.
But I didn't get that sense from the thing that I saw.
Maybe I was too sensitive.
And the sense that I got was, and I actually even said, because I watched it with my, I was visiting my dad, and my dad watched it, and I watched it with my girlfriend. I was like, I really kind of get the sense that Johnny might have been like one of those Peter Sellers types that was like brilliant on camera and then off screen, like one could get near him.
20 years I sat and talked to him, and the best when the lights were on. Nobody could be like, lights would go down, and he'd start to play with the pencils, and I would say, my husband and I used to laugh, I would say the same thing, "Gee, the band sounds good tonight." And he would say to me, "Yeah."
Oh, man.
And that was the whole conversation for 3 minutes.
And the lights come back
lights
on.
Come back on. "So, you got a new dog, did you?" You know, and you're off and running. It was amazing. But like him, no one. And I love working with Letterman. He's great. I love working with Of course, I'm forgetting Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon both.
Yeah.
You know, but nobody can touch Carson.
Well, there's
and that sounds so stupid. It's like an old lady talking. Yeah, and the best president in the world was Woodrow Wilson. You know, it's like.
They don't make hosts like they used to.
Like they, oh boy.
But I do think there was a very specific kind of guy that existed back then, particularly television celebrity. And the truth of the matter is, TV celebrities don't have the same impact that they had when Johnny hit it at that time, or anyone.
There were fewer
stations, yeah.
I went on the Carson show. I was nowhere. I was writing jokes for Phyllis Diller and Bob Newhart. I was making a living writing jokes at $7 a joke. You know, that was how I was doing it. And they bring me on. They were scared to bring me on as a comedian because I was so wild.
Right.
Because I was talking about having an affair. And while I was with my professor, and while he was engaged to me, his wife became pregnant. So I figured he wasn't sincere. They thought that was like a young girl saying that. You know, different times. So they brought me on as a girl writer. And they brought me on the last 10 minutes of the show. The next morning, I was famous.
Wow.
Because there were three things you could watch.
Yeah.
So one third of America saw you.
And when did you kind of start feeling like... Because, you know, when I started watching you when I was a kid, it was very much like, you know, Liz Taylor and all the, you know, like...
That just was happening. But I've always... What's kept me going, tell the truth. Pretend, just tell the truth. Elizabeth Taylor became the fattest thing. There was a picture of her. She couldn't get out of the car. It was like a joke. Think Paula Deen and butter her sides. I mean, you couldn't get her out of the car. And I made a joke about Elizabeth Taylor being fat. Nobody did it. And it went all around the world.
Yeah.
And that was that started it.
And did you feel like that there was a, because once you kind of go down that, oh my God, she's saying shocking stuff, but she's really honest. Does it light that much more of a fire under you? Like, oh God, how am I going to fucking top this? And how do I got to top this?
I just always try to tell the truth. You know, that's why I'm so politically incorrect.
Yeah.
Which I love because everyone is so scared. You know that from comedy. So scared to say anything.
Well, particularly now, I think Chris Rock just did an interview, maybe in the New York Times, about how so many comics are afraid now that people are going to take stuff out of context at shows.
They do.
And when you put it on the internet, and then you can't defend that stuff because they're oh, okay, so you think, you know, this one thing's funny. No. It's just when the concept of the set, you cannot. It's
well, I said Lucy Liu, I don't like her in yellow, too matchy-matchy. Well, people went crazy.
And they didn't, they weren't cool with
they
that.
They weren't going there. That's
do
wrong.
Do you get the emails? Do they email?
Oh, emails. And I just said Justin Bieber looks like a lesbian, which he does. He looks like a very good-looking young lesbian.
I think most people would be on board for that.
Oh, 15 million little girls didn't like that
one. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And a couple of lesbians, too.
Listen, if you want to talk if you want to talk about the least ironic group of people in the world, it's like 14 or 15-year-old girls.
Oh.
They don't understand irony.
Why I hate Taylor Swift.
Do you let that stuff bother you? The
I don't read anything negative.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of newspapers I just have never seen.
But you're on Twitter, right? You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter all the time. I have my own Twitter.
And so do you...
I don't defend.
Yeah.
I say it, you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Leave me alone. She said, comedian, I'm here to amuse you. Calm down.
Yeah.
Especially, I have one great Auschwitz joke, which is, because I do like a Jew joke. And then I say, I'm allowed to say this because I lost my entire family at Auschwitz. And the audience goes dead silence. And I go, they were on the other tour bus and it broke down. And I was stuck for an hour in the gift shop. I know it was an hour because I had bought the watch and Hitler's hand went around. And then I say, and the pencil you did one way, watch the Jews go out of the oven, watch the Jews go into the oven. The audience, I've gotten such hate mail on that one. Such hate mail.
And you can't, I mean.
All from Mel Gibson, though.
Those are my jokes.
Leave me alone. Twinkle titties or whatever he calls them.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I mean, if you get defensive about your material,
I'm a comedian, and you know what? Again, Bill Cosby, all these guys have such wisdom. Bill Cosby said to me one time, because Bill was so brilliant when he started, because he never mentioned he was black. He was just funny.
Funny guy.
And he did my first album cover, the whole thing. He was great. He loved me. And he was a little ahead of me in the village. So he said to me once, don't change. He said, if 1% of America thinks you're funny. 1%. You'll fill stadiums for the rest of your life.
Oh, my God.
I never forgot that. He said, don't you change because somebody in the audience doesn't think you're funny. Too bad. Then they won't come back.
Wow.
So these are little things I still think about a lot.
What were they? What when you're kind of watching all these guys when you're coming when you're coming up together? What is it? What are you taking from them? And what are you learning? And what are you taking? Like what tricks are you noticing?
I'll tell you the greatest thing was we had great honor. We would sit there and you would watch George Carlin and you would watch Bill and you would watch Woody and then me and a little of David Brennan, a couple of others that I'm sure I'm forgetting. And we never took from each other. Cavett, you know, the honor among each other. And then someone, I was told, Jackie Mason, would come in and just copy everybody's.
Whoa.
And I've heard the same thing of somebody much more recent. I won't say. But so I took that away. Don't ever take anybody's joke. And I just, and say what is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of us was such a distinct personality on stage that I couldn't do what Woody was saying. I couldn't do what Carlin was saying. You want to hear a terrible George Carlin?
Yes, please.
All right. We all loved Woody. We all loved Lenny Bruce. Lenny Bruce was at the height. And he was
right, the god.
Oh, God. And he was amazing. I got to see him. Just incredible.
Wait, before you tell the story, what was Lenny Bruce like live?
Brilliant. Brilliant, glowing, smart, handsome, sexy, fabulous. A guy's... he said things you would... all you did was go, yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah. Beyond anything I've ever seen before or since. Beyond. So Lenny Bruce was everybody's God. You know, we were all coming up, God, God, God. And then he comes to see me and he writes me the note because we were working the bitter end. He was at a place called Cafe Ogogo across the street. He snuck in and he sends me the note. You know, you're right, they're wrong, keep going. So I, so excited. Years later, I say to George Carlin, you know what kept me alive for those fucking 7 years? I said, Lenny Bruce came in early on and sent me a note. You're right, they're wrong. And George says to me, Lenny sent me a note. They're right, you're wrong. He said, I bet he sent to every comic, you're right, they're wrong. And so a whole lot of comics that shouldn't be working today are walking around going, but Lenny Bruce said, they're right, I'm wrong.
Hey, Bill Cosby, hello? Hey, Bill, did you get, oh, the note says I was wrong.
Oh,
damn it.
Lenny Bruce note.
You don't still have the note, do you?
I lost it. It kills me. It's somewhere. How about that for a stew? It's somewhere among thousands of papers.
Oh, yeah. I know that bothers. I mean, I saw the drawers with all the cards and the jokes.
And pieces of paper. If you look at my bag, just paper, paper, paper. Look at this. I mean, everything. I write notes all the time. You know, you think it's funny to say, hold on. you know, when you're really ugly, when your doctor asks you to leave your blouse on for a chest x-ray. You know, cute, may work, may not, but it's funny.
Do you ever go back into the archives and go, I'm going to try to dug this out and see if I can make it work?
I do when I can't think of a funny joke, and that'll kick me off into another joke.
Yeah.
But you look at the old jokes, you go, ugh. Not so good.
Do you? I would love a small. I just taped my first hour special, and it's airing in October.
I mean, now we're on
Comedy Central.
Yeah, so you. Oh, and what about you? What about your YouTube thing?
Well,
why?
It's,
no. Look what Louis C.K. made.
Louis is a much more famous stand-up than I am. So that model of selling your stuff online works great if people know who, like, if you're already a famous stand-up.
All right, but wait, I don't know what they paid you on Comedy Central, but how many people watch you on YouTube?
It depends on the show. I have a show that a few 100,000 people watch.
Okay, and what about here on this show?
Another couple 100,000 people.
A couple 100,000.
Yeah.
Okay, if you say to this couple 100,000, I have just done a special. If you send me a dollar, you would make a couple of $100,000. That's more. I know that Comedy Central is paying you, I hope.
But that math...
Because I know I did a show for them and I didn't get a couple of $100,000. Yeah.
But that math
how
doesn't...
How many zeros and how many commas?
It was good.
I'm going to fucking kill myself.
It wasn't...
They
wasn't,
always tell me it's a career move. I'm 78 years old. I don't want any more career moves.
Well, yeah.
I want the money now. It's just career the money, move. Yeah. This will really pay off later. There is no later.
I'll tell you, there were
I'm wearing a toe tag.
There were two things...
It's not later, but go ahead.
There were two things for me. Number one, I didn't think, I mean, yeah, technically if 200,000 people send it out, but the truth is they don't. Like, that math doesn't work with the internet. For some reason, it just doesn't work. It's a very small percentage of people that actually will do. If I said, hey, send me a dollar, which I'm not saying, internet, it would not be
a dollar.
You can send Joan a dollar.
I'll send him something. I'll send him a gift.
But the other thing is that, you know, even though the YouTube channel or whatever could still may get a couple hundred thousand people to watch it, it's still like having it on television where a million people would see it is still better for me for touring at this point. When you get to Louis's place or like Radiohead or any of the bands who said, hey, we're going to just sell our stuff for free and kind of fuck the system, they can do that. But I'm still not quite there yet.
I get it.
So
but maybe what you should have done is, because, you know, they do so much extra on a special.
Yeah.
You should have done your special,
mm-hmm.
and then you should have stayed and done all the extra material you didn't put into your special and hold it for 7 weeks.
Well, we are shooting.
I'll talk to you.
You can coach me.
Yeah.
You can coach me a little bit. But for me, you know, all that material's gone now.
Yeah.
And then so now I'm going through the process of starting over, and it's fucking like, oh my God, what do I want to say? I know I have stuff I want to say, but what do I want to say? It just feels like digging in the fucking trash.
Well, I have a special coming out, and they're holding it, thank God, on Showtime to Christmas. Thank God. So I have all that time now to slowly feed in and pull out. Because otherwise you do a special, as you say, and it's goodbye.
It's gone, yeah.
And people get angry. You know, I opened for everybody. I was known as a strip slut for a long time in Vegas. If you were a male singer, I opened for you.
Yeah.
And all they wanted to hear from all these guys was Tony Bennett singing I Left My Heart in San Francisco, and I'm making this up, and Neil Sedaka singing whatever he sang. You know, but you dare to tell them a joke that they've heard before. And they go, yeah,
yeah,
heard that.
Yeah.
And so it's such a totally different thing.
Oh, yeah. We get that all the time, like on the internet. If, you know, if they even hear one word that sounds similar, they go, hey, I already saw you do that. Like, no, but this is now it's just a small piece of a larger bit. Yeah. No, come on.
Tags now. I want to use these tags.
Because I grow like that. That's how your thing grows. You do one thing and then it adds to another and it adds to another and it adds to another. Yeah, so I just ignore it. I ignore it when they hiss and boo and they walk out. Where you going?
Did you ever work with Steve Martin in Vegas?
Steve Martin. No, but there's what a mind that one is.
I got to see him when I was a kid too.
And the writing now, the writing is so brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, he's turned totally into writing. Where did he make his money? Let me ask you something.
Sure.
I'm fine. I do very well. I don't have this kind of money. Where did Steve Martin make his money?
He's an art dealer.
Yeah.
So in addition to all of the
art. Buying art and then like,
So in addition to all the other stuff, and also like, you know, he was a fucking stadium act in the 70s. And so he was making shit tons of money then. And I think he just invested it well and bought art.
I'm so part of investing well. I should not have slept with Bernie Madoff. I haven't done nothing but bad.
That's a bad.
Bernie, I said, you're a really nice Jewish guy. Maybe there's a future here. Will you take care of my money? But, you know, all these comics that you say, where do they make their money?
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy, did he? Millions, billions, I've seen that. Tom Arnold. Tell me where Tom Arnold made his
money.
Now,
Tom Arnold, I don't know where he makes all his money. Eddie Murphy, I know, if you, I saw him on the, maybe like a Barbara Walters special a couple years ago, and maybe it was Barbara Walters or Oprah. Someone was interviewing him, and they were kind of getting into the territory of, you know, not every one of your movies makes a lot of money. And he was like, I know this is going to sound obnoxious, what I'm about to say, but of the highest grossing comedies of blah, blah, you know, I'm in like six of them of the, you know, and you start listening more and you're like, oh yeah. So, you know, if he had points on like Beverly Hills Cop or whatever, like that's it for life.
All right. Say no more.
Yeah. So that was
so depressed.
That was
Betty White has a Rolls Royce coffin waiting for her. I mean, it's just not fair.
And she's still
fair.
Yeah. I like Betty.
She's okay.
That was she's what, 15 years older than you are?
At least
something like that.
No, she lies. She says 13.
So no matter.
Isn't it funny when women in their 90s still lie?
No, 91.
I'm 89.
Really? Okay.
Excuse me. You're 93. 89 again.
So no matter how far you get into comedy, you still do that thing where you're like, oh, they got it.
Yeah. It's fascinating. But so anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
So when you do your own thing, like your own YouTube, Do you rent a studio? Where do you do your YouTube thing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we're producing 24 different shows.
I'm going to kill myself. 24 different shows.
We have a lot of different, you know, like one of our partners on the East Coast is Broadway Video.
You're like a funny Ryan Seacrest.
I don't know.
Ryan Seacrest.
He's not that much shorter than I am. I always thought he was, because Joel McHale always makes fun of him for being not tall. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, Joel's like
6'4". Yeah, he's my height.
Yeah, you guys are the same height. I don't know. I think I just have a short attention span, so I just always need to be doing different things.
Yeah, me too.
What else do you want to do?
Everything. I want to get a state. I want to get my own YouTube. There's no question about it now. After seeing this, no question about it.
Why don't you just do a weekly? Do you know that there are people on? Okay, I'm gonna. Here's where I can help you.
I'm begging you.
I will. There are people. There are YouTubers, people that you've never heard of that are famous in the YouTube universe that are making shit tons of money just doing one video a week.
Here I am.
You, Joan.
So who do I speak to? Who's your partner?
Well, offline, I will give you any information you want because nothing would make me happier than to help you.
I'm dying to do that.
And, you know, if you just did like a weekly vlog of just you ranting about whatever, not only would you love it because you could say whatever the fuck you wanted, but when you start to build your audience, then you can start having sponsors come in. You know, there are girls who just do like makeup tutorials that are making more money than like the Style Channel because they have three times the audience.
I'm getting a migraine. I'm so sad.
It's a slight paradigm shift, but it's not too late. It's not too late.
No, I want to definitely do that. I definitely want to go back to Broadway. Mm-hmm. I love, I'm a New York kid.
Yeah.
I want to go back for the fourth time. I want to go back. I've done three times on Broadway. I want to do my own movie. I want to write another movie. Always, you know, I always think I haven't peaked yet.
Right.
I know there's something better coming.
Let me ask you, when your mind, what happens when you peak? Is that it? You're just done?
I think how sad once you peak, you know, and then you go down. It's sad. I just think the same, better ahead. Better ahead.
No matter what, better ahead.
Yeah.
Even if you hit it as big as you think, you know, that you want tomorrow, you still
something
are in that mind.
Better ahead.
Yeah.
Better ahead.
So what's in
I have a speech. I owe this to no fucking person. I got my speech ready.
Do you think it's do you consider success to be being famous or just constantly working on new things that you
success
are passionate
about? Success is doing what you want to do and living in a great way too.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with being famous. Yeah. Famous is great. I'll tell you, and I love these people. I can't stand fame. Yeah, when someone's sick and you want to get them in the hospital, fame is very nice.
Right.
When you want to get on that plane and it's been canceled and you're the first one American Airlines puts on the next one, fame is tip-top terrific.
Right.
And anyone that doesn't get how wonderful it is, they're a fool.
Well, I think the fame card, I think, and I have limited experience
with it. It's going to get more and more.
But what I think about it is that the one thing that is useful about it is that it just opens doors and provides more opportunity. Like, that's the function of it. It just allows you to do more of the kind of things you want to do.
And how lucky. You know, I went to my class reunion, which was Women Dancing with Urns. I mean, it was just awful. But I thought, my whole life, I've done everything I wanted. I was trying to make a bucket list. I have no bucket list.
Really?
You know what I'm saying?
What was something that was on your bucket list that you got to do?
I wanted to go to Williamsburg, Virginia, because I like the fantasy. They all walk around in costume.
Right.
And it's 17. And I went last month.
And that was...
And they all go, and you curtsy, and you carry on. And we're like, you know, mop caps.
Did you do an old-timey fashion police?
Ye old-timey. I took my grandson, you know, and he was bored to death. We went in the stocks, you know, all that stupid. I love that kind of stuff. But my bucket list is just is now getting on next the new thing. I always want to be on the new. Be on the new.
That's a good motivation.
Yeah, yeah. Old bores me. I'm very ADD. That's what keeps everybody alive in our business.
Would you rather live the way that you live, constantly being ADD, or would you ever dream of like, can't I just be happy and content and not feel like I have to go a million miles an hour all the time?
I would be so. I have this beautiful house in Connecticut that I bought and I fixed up, you know, that kind of thing. 84 acres. It was a terrible house and I redid it and la, 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 la. I'm up there for 2 days. I'm screaming. Screaming. You're going to talk to a deer?
Yeah.
And they'd say things. Oh, a raccoon came in, Miss Rivers. Oh, got to get out. What the fuck am I doing here?
Girl.
And so
city
now
girl.
That house just sits empty and you got to be in the city.
Yeah. Trying to rent it out to some rich idiot.
Hopefully not the Schwartzes.
The Schwartzes. Imagine when you go back to take your pictures and they say to you, they don't want to take them. Thank you, but the Schwartzes would prefer.
Can you believe she said the P word? I don't know if that's how the Schwartzes talk.
I don't understand why she was making jokes about jewelry.
I mean, really? This is the worst thing anyone's ever had to deal with tonight.
And we flew her in. Yeah.
Hold me in our gold.
This is the worst thing to happen to South Africa. I swear.
It's really in the history.
I can't think of one other thing.
Anyway.
All right, so what else?
That's it. We're kind of at the end of our hour.
This has been fabulous.
It has been lovely to have you on.
Tell me who's the worst guest you've ever had.
The worst
guest. Come on,
I've told
you all these things.
Well, we've never, you're not going to believe me when I say this. We've never had a bad guest because everyone, I don't know, we're pretty nice.
Who is hard to talk to then? Not bad. Hard to, like, you know, like somebody comes in and they just have yes and no answers.
I'll tell you,
well,
who was there anyone who was like that?
They could have been lovely and charming.
As far as recently, as a British writer, comedian, and actor, Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, I know.
He's one of my favorite guys, but he's very quiet.
He's not difficult. He's very shy.
Yeah. So that was kind of like, it was like, you know, I was so excited to ask him about all the stuff he's ever done, and he was very, you know, too polite to be.
Like, well, you know, the Brits, like, a lot of times they feel uncomfortable talking about themselves. And if you say, oh my God, you're so brilliant, they're like, oh, I can't, please.
Yeah.
I mean, he just kept talking about how he shouldn't be an actor and he doesn't understand when anyone watches him. and we're just licking all over the guy.
Right.
And so he was uncomfortable. There really hasn't been, you know.
Nothing disastrous.
No, I think there was
some drunken live shows.
Oh, that I love.
Yeah.
Oh, just you though.
Yeah.
But because I love when somebody comes in and they're so high, you don't know where they're going.
No one's really
staring like beyond you.
No one's really been that way. You know, for the first like year and a half of the podcast, I was just bringing in people I knew.
Yeah.
And so, then after a year and a half, then it started to be like, how did we book Willem Dafoe? Like it started to get really crazy with people. But everyone's been pretty cool with us so far. We've been lucky. And I keep waiting for it to happen where I'm waiting for that one interview where they just get yes and no. And then I'm like, well, 7-minute podcast.
Yeah.
Well, Moby once came home with me and he fell asleep. Reminded me of my wedding, you know, my husband. But that's those are the kind of things you just go, I'm talking to you and you're asleep. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you always remember.
He really
things.
Came back to your house and just fell asleep?
Yeah. No, on air.
What?
He fell asleep on air.
How's that happen?
He was so allegedly drugged.
Wow.
He just came on and you're talking.
Moby?
Yeah.
He's vegan. He's probably just really tired. Needs
not
protein.
Enough protein.
Yeah. And I see him now all the time. He's fine. You know, not fine. Not like, you know, well, let's go dancing. But he
just the timing probably.
He says hello. But I'll never forget. It was on the Carson show. And he talked and he went to sleep.
Oh, my God.
That was good. I love things like that.
We should get Moby on and then I'm just going to be like, you're going to fall asleep? You're not gonna fall asleep.
Joan Rivers said you fell asleep. Yeah.
Joan was on. She said you fell asleep.
Make another enemy.
No, now you've really got me thinking. Like, has anyone really been? No, I guess not.
See, the one I loved. Last thing was I met Meryl Streep and she has humor. I said I loved you. You were brilliant and precious.
Yeah.
And she laughed. Thank God.
Wow.
I thought if she just stares at me, I'll kill myself.
Oh, I know. Especially when you lob a joke out like that.
Yeah.
Nothing hurts worse than a failed joke.
Yeah. Boy, I said you were something precious. Wow. 20-year-old fat black girl.
But you have to know. But
she laughed.
People have to know, like when you specifically are talking to them, like yeah, they know you're fucking around. Still,
it depends. This is great. Just great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
A pleasure.
Awesome. Come back anytime. Seriously, you're welcome.
I have to now pick your brains.
We'll talk about the YouTube stuff. I feel like I have a plan for you that I think would work. It might take a little time because that's just how the internet works.
Hurry. Look at my age.
You're fine.
We have no time.
No.
I work weekends. I have 7 days a week.
You're like a spry lady in her mid-50s.
Sure. Yeah,
it's
right.
True. No, I know nobody. I can think of nobody else who keeps the schedule. I'm like people our age don't keep the kind of schedule that you keep.
Yeah, I'm lucky. It's genetic.
It Seriously. Must be some sort genetic. Of weird genetic mutation.
Yeah, genetic. I had an aunt like this, so I'm genetic.
Oh, wow.
It's good. Well, thank you for being
thank
here, Joan
you
Rivers.
So, a pleasure.
Thanks.
Dane Cook, I didn't mean it. Yes, I did.
Enjoy your burritos.
Okay.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.